The following is an unrehearsed interview with Mr. Lawrence Pope of, I think you said Kennesville?
Kernersville.
Kernersville, right outside of Winston-Salem, North Carolina, by John Klee for the Kentucky Oral History Commission. The interview is being conducted on January the 22nd, 1988, and we're at the Kentucky King Warehouse, where Mr. Pope has a small apartment while he's up here in Kentucky during the tobacco market. Tell me how you got into the tobacco business, a little bit about your background.
I was raised on a tobacco farm just out of Winston-Salem, North Carolina, and after finishing high school, the farm wasn't large enough to support my father and myself both, so I secured a job with one of the major tobacco companies.
Which one was that?
American Tobacco Company.
And what did you do in that capacity, buy, buyer?
After a couple of years, I was trained to buy, and then I bought tobacco with them for 17 years.
Is that how you found your way to Kentucky?
That's correct. I was in Maysville on two different stays. I came to Maysville in the early 1950s as a factory foreman, and then came back later as a tobacco buyer in the 60s.
Now, as a factory foreman here, where they handled the tobacco for American, or what did they do there? Did they process something?
No, we just handled the tobacco. We hauled it off of the warehouse floors and packed it into hard juice and shipped it back to the re-drying plants, which at that time were in Durham, North Carolina, and Reidsville, North Carolina.
I see. Okay. And then the second stitch you had up here as a...
Came back in the mid to early 60s as a tobacco buyer for American Tobacco Company.
When did you become interested in getting into the warehouse business?
Well, I was continually interested in it through my tenure with the American Tobacco Company.
Uh-huh. I guess that kind of thing's a big investment. Did you start in North Carolina? Did you start up here?
Started in North Carolina.
Uh-huh.
And of course, I had, as a sideline, I had several small companies. I raised tobacco all during those years as a sideline.
Uh-huh.
When I was employed at American Tobacco Company, had a little trucking company one time as a sideline, and was able to muster together enough money to go into warehouse business in Winston-Salem, North Carolina.
Now, that was, and what? When did that start, your warehouse there?
Been 20 years ago, so that would be about 66, 67, along
okay.
that time.
And then when did you invest here in Kentucky?
I've been here 7 years. The first year we came here, we leased this warehouse from Clyde Barber, which we still lease it from Mr. Clyde Barber. Then 3 years ago, I don't remember the date, we purchased the Burley warehouse downtown, which was, we later lost, 2 years after that, we lost it to fire.
Now, I'm interested in this whole, let me start with the first investment with the leasing of this warehouse. The early 80s were not particularly terrible times for tobacco, but it was the future was a little bleak, or the tobacco program was going through some problems. Did that scare you off? I guess it didn't in any way. Come on. My question was, how did you decide to get in this kind of a volatile time?
Well, it's had the tobacco business in Winston-Salem, and as the demand was reducing some, we didn't have quite as large a crop, so I felt like we need to cover a longer period of time. We could use our equipment and people here in Kentucky and utilize them better, because I knew we was facing some little tougher times in the tobacco industry at Hagen. So that was what enticed us to come here.
So it was a way to maintain your personnel, not lose them, give them longer employment, and
right,
so forth.
Right.
Okay.
And
after that fire, of course, I assume the building was insured somewhat.
Partially insured, but not near adequate enough to pay for the loss.
Right. Well, that was the big question. It was different buying an existing warehouse, but then the question of building a new one. I'm sure it was one that weighed heavily. What prompted you to go ahead and make that decision?
The big decision on that was that we felt like we had to have a new warehouse building if we stayed in the tobacco business in Maysville, Kentucky.
Okay.
And we knew that tobacco auctions definitely wouldn't pay for the investment in that, but we felt we put the building in a real desirable location. we felt like in Maysville was ready for a little more growth than they'd had in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, we're also in the construction business in North Carolina.
Okay.
And we built the building ourselves and have it available for lease to manufacturers.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it kind of leads to the question, you know, people here locally certainly are investing in the area, but it seems it's just interesting that a person whose, you know, residence and backgrounds in North Carolina would make that commitment to this area to build a new building and make it available.
A lot of things caused it to happen. I like the Maysville area. I was here in the last 5 or 6 years, mm-hmm. and I knew right many people here.
Yes, sir.
And I felt like it was a good opportunity in the warehousing end
mm-hmm.
To build a new building.
Yeah.
And the local industrial commission and the town people, Chamber of Commerce, and different town officials enticed us every way possible to invest in this area.
Yeah, and that was through the issuance of municipal bonds and any kind of those kind of things that could help you out.
That's correct.
How has that paid off? Of course, that warehouse is really physically removed from all the other ones which are here in the east end of town. Farmers are a conservative lot. Have they been pretty willing to bring their tobacco to a new location? And
yeah, we've been real pleased this year. Our business has increased over last year about a little better than 20%,
mm-hmm.
with the crop being cut 6% last year.
Right.
And we feel like the hard work that we're doing, plus the new location, better facilities to sell tobacco in, has contributed to this.
How does a person like yourself, and of course, you know, again, with, you know, how farmers are rather conservative, how have they chosen to sell with you as opposed to, you know, farmers that live here in the area? Has that been a problem for you? How do you attract your customers?
No, it hadn't been that large a problem to us. We try to bring highly qualified people that works the tobacco industry from the 1st of July
mm-hmm.
all the way through this time. And a large part of the tobacco industry is handled in North Carolina, with the re-drying plants being there.
Right.
And we feel like that we can bring a little expertise to the area that possibly wouldn't hear mm-hmm. with just a local warehouse.
Right. So, what about, of course, you know, the warehousing business, as far as competitiveness, you think that the services you offer and so forth gives you at least a shot at the customers, or they've acclimated to you fairly well?
Yeah, we're real pleased. They've showed their appreciation for what we're doing for the area.
Mm-hmm.
We try to invest what profits we're able to make. Some years no profits, but when we do make a profit, we try to invest a part of it back in the local area.
You kind of suggested with the building, the new building, that you had plans for it other than just as a warehousing facility. How has that developed, or has it yet?
We have shown it to several different companies, and there's been a lot of interest in it, and mm-hmm. the Department of Commerce in Frankfurt has shown it to some customers, Chamber of Commerce here, so we have brought some people to Maysville to look at the building.
Yeah. You're not discouraged that nothing has positives developed yet? I mean, is that, when you're building a building like that, do you think, well, if something happens in 3 years or 4 years or 5 years, we'll still be all right? Or what kind of thinking goes into your mind with that kind of thing?
Well, we have a break-even proposition on the building selling tobacco.
Okay.
It's not a profitable
right.
situation on it, but we have a break-even situation. Mm-hmm. And it has attracted some users to the Maysville area.
Mm-hmm.
The people that's building the building now in the park behind us came to look at our building 4 different times.
Is that right?
Before they decided to build.
With their
the building didn't quite fit them, didn't quite
right.
suit their needs.
Right.
But they wouldn't have come to the Maysville area looking at all had it not been something here to look at.
Mm-hmm. I see. That's interesting. I think I've asked you the questions that are pertinent there. I wanted to ask you about your personal, and of course your crew too, goes through the same kind of calendar. A lot of people that know a little bit about tobacco here don't realize there's so many out-of-state people that come and reside in areas, and of course that's repeated all across the state with Maysville and Lexington and the bigger markets. There's the buyers and the and the auctioneers and so forth. Could you run me a little calendar of how your year runs, starting with the flue-cured market? Down in the South, when will they start putting out the tobacco down there?
It'll be set in Georgia area, Georgia, Florida area, probably in late March.
Okay.
And then on up in the South Carolina area in early April, early to mid-April.
And are you still supervising some growing of tobacco?
I am in the Winston-Salem area.
Yeah,
of course,
right.
In the Winston-Salem area, we'll start setting tobacco there about the 1st of May.
I see. Uh-huh.
And then we'll start selling tobacco there about the middle of August in the Winston-Salem area.
Right.
The Georgia-Florida areas, we'll start selling tobacco about the 4th to the 10th of July.
Are your interests centered primarily in the Winston-Salem area and here?
That's correct. Yeah,
okay.
Winston-Salem and Maysville.
Right. Now, you start selling tobacco in the middle of August down there.
That's correct.
Of course, they harvest their tobacco differently by pulling the leaves as they become, or as it comes to the market, to you differently, where it's positioned on the plant. Isn't that correct?
Yes, the tobacco there is all, the leaves are pulled in the field, leaving the stalk in the field.
Right.
And the leaves are harvested as they get ripe from the bottom up.
Mm-hmm.
Usually takes 5 to 6 weeks to harvest a crop.
How does that make the warehouseman's job harder or easier? You're getting all the same kind of crop same time, don't you?
Some, but not a whole lot. We have several more grades of flue-cured tobacco than we do burley tobacco because of the mixture. One farmer might pull the first primings real heavy, the next one might pull them light, one of them might pull it before it gets ripe, so we have many more different grades in the flue-cured.
Yeah. Are they bringing that to the market in sheets or baled, or how's that coming?
It's all sold in sheets there, in loose leaf.
Your relationship with the buyers now, are some of the same buyers that you deal with here, there too?
Yes, many of the same buyers, and of course all the management, the supervisors, and the top management of the tobacco company.
Are the same. Of course, you had contacts with American. How are those contacts valuable as a warehouseman or being a buyer? What kind of perspective did that bring to you as a warehouseman then?
Well, it helped me very much to know the buyer's outlook on the tobacco. As far as the contacts or the personnel, that's not that helpful.
Right.
But when I was with the tobacco company, I knew how they thought and their philosophy on what type of tobacco they like to buy and how they like to see it handled and this type of thing. That's been very valuable too.
Right. What about the warehouseman's role in selling tobacco? I've dealt with some other people, and I just want to touch on this briefly for you, since I'm emphasizing the North Carolina connection, but. You've got it from two different perspectives. How do you handle buyers and auctioneers auctioneers and trying to get the best price for the farmer?
Well, to start with, we do everything possible to hire the best auctioneers in the business.
Mm-hmm.
And we're fortunate in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, I've employed the second world's champion who won the championship the second year.
Right.
And out here in Maysville, we've employed three that sells the whole market, which are all world champion auctioneers. And once we start the basket of tobacco or pallet of tobacco out here, we put a starting price on it with one of our experienced personnel that we think will be the high price, and then I stay in the sale and buy tobacco myself.
Well, I was going to ask you about that. Some warehousemen are more aggressive in doing that. Of course, you're taking a risk on that. Most of that you'll put back on the market and try to sell again. Is that a pretty successful technique? Of course, that makes a lot of farmers happy, I think.
That's right. I mean, that's where we feel like it. We might have a little edge on some people that don't buy any tobacco. We buy strongly and put it back on the market for resale. We lose money. Probably more than we make money,
right.
But we're able to get the farmer a higher price for his tobacco, and that's the bottom line.
Right.
The better price we can get for the farmer, the more farmers will sell with us.
Right. Another connection I wanted to ask you about is about the auction system itself. how successful has that been? You know, some farmers occasionally will complain that, you know, well, there doesn't seem to really be an auction going on, and there have been years where the prices haven't varied very much. How do you, you know, what do you say to those farmers that?
Well, we feel like the auction system itself has been very successful over the years, but when you get a real strong market where the demand is real strong, the crop maybe is not quite large enough, then the companies will all the tobacco, both the good quality and the poor quality, will be bringing the same price. Right. But there always has been a top price on tobacco at auction. Now this year we was able to break the top price from $1.61 to $1.63 by continuing to buy the very better piles for the warehouse.
Right.
A lot of that tobacco we sold back and lost $1.00. But before the season was over, the companies increased to the $1.63.
What about your the foreign buyers? Does and of course they're they buy through dealers. Or someone's buying for them. You've got a different perspective than some people here just locally. Have you seen any differences over the last few years between the foreign buying in, say, flue-cured versus burley? Or?
No, when you have the foreign orders have been a little bit larger in the last couple of years than they were for previous years before that, both in the flue-cured and the burley. They're always a little heavier when you have a good crop. This crop of tobacco, 1987-88 crop of tobacco is pretty poor quality.
Right.
It's not desirable for the exporters.
Right.
But we were still able in the Maysville area to get a larger percentage sold to the exporters due to our quality was a little above what it was in some of the central bluegrass areas.
Suggestions have been made, and I guess it's already been announced that the flue-cured quotas will be increased, and it looks like the burley might follow up on that. How do you feel about, of course, we've seen like a 20% price decrease in the last 4 years and almost a 50% decrease in the quota. That makes a warehouseman, I'm sure, has some sleepless nights because both of those cut down on your income. Do you think we turned the corner on that, or what? How's it look?
Well, it's all supply and demand. Now, there is the increase we had in the flue cured, of course, is all tied to the formula that was passed by Congress a couple years ago. The companies have to report to a private auditing firm on how much they intend to purchase next year.
Right.
Then those totals are combined, and the tobacco that's left in the pool in the flue cured, over 100 million pounds, is decreased from what the companies anticipate buying. And then the Secretary, when we come up with that total, the Secretary of Agriculture has the authority under the Congressional Act to decrease the quota by 3% or increase it by 3%. In the flue cured this year, the formula called for 9.8% increase.
And
the Secretary lowered it by 3%. The burley, to finish that, answering your question, on the burley side of it, the pool is getting much more of this tobacco than anybody anticipated them getting.
Right.
And the burley pool, a comfortable line for them is 50 million. So it'll be a decrease over the 50 million. And the large amount of tobacco that they've gotten at the tail end of the season will affect what our quota will be.
Sure. But are you optimistic generally then that
I think the formula will work. I think if the governing bodies will leave it alone now, I really think it'll work. Now, we might have some 6%, 10% increases 1 year and then come back with a 3 or 6 cut the next year. But I think that's what the flexibility that it has will definitely help the tobacco program and stop some imports.
Yeah. I interrupt you kind of in the middle of your chronology of events. You will stay on the flue-cured market then until, when does that finish up, the end of July?
No, we don't finish there until about the end of October.
Sorry, right, that's July is when you begin about.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So the end of October, and that gives you, what, about a three-week
Well, the split? Last couple of years, we've had a late crop in the Old Belt due to dry weather in the Winston-Salem area, and we only had just we packed up one night and came out here the next day and started to work. We didn't have any time in between the markets.
Uh-huh. And then this market runs from Thanksgiving until about now.
That's correct. A lot of times on until first of February.
Right. So you're, when do you have a chance to take a breath and make sure everything's, count your dollars and see how everything came out? I guess you have to do that all the way through, but.
Yeah, you have to have good bookkeeping all the way, but we do. We finish the season, like February and March are probably our two slowest, slowest months. Then, under the designation program that the Flukeyard operates in, we have to go back to contacting farmers at that time.
I see, as far as they designate a warehouse, is that
correct?
That's correct. Right.
And the designation, they have to make their determination with the ASCS office by April the 15th each year what warehouse they plan to sell their crop with.
So you're out trying to get customers early on.
That's correct.
After they've designated, that's more or less it.
Right.
What was the purpose of that, and why haven't they done a similar thing here? Was that to...
Well, we had such a blockage at the warehouses. We had long lines, farmers couldn't get to the warehouses, plus the real old warehouses with large square footage of space was earning more sales time, but in some cases they were not the warehouse that the farmers wished to sell with. Under the designation program, it doesn't make any difference what size your warehouse is. You get your daily allocations based on your percent of the farmers that designate your warehouse.
I see. How is the warehouse business, as far as its competitiveness, compared in North Carolina versus here?
Probably not much difference. It's about as competitive one way or the other. It helps the aggressive warehouses probably more on designation. It helps them to do a better job, and it keeps a stronger warehouse company to sell to the backer, regardless of whether he's got a small warehouse or a real large one.
Mm-hmm. You talked about your employees that stay with you, I guess, now year round. Is that correct?
That's correct. We have other businesses that we utilize them in basically year round.
So how many people are we talking about that travel up this way at a time? I guess it.
Well, for our particular warehouse, we probably bring all eight to ten people total, including myself.
I see.
And then we probably hire 35, 40 people locally.
Locally, right. As I mentioned to you when we just met outside, this is a gypsy lifestyle, and your son's getting ready to leave here before long. How has that affected family life? Or I guess it was something you got used to with being with American.
Yes, I started when I was 17 years old with it, and of course the tobacco family, both, so to speak, the tobacco buyers for all of the companies are used to working two markets, and some of them even work three markets. Some of them will have to work the Merlin market in about 30 more days.
Right, which is a little later. You never went up that way, stayed with the two.
Never went up that way, but it's kind of like any position with a sales job. David, you take, you do that, don't you?
No, what I do is I'll index it so that if a researcher's trying to find something, he can just go right to that part. If he's looking just for, if he wants to find out something about Flukeyard at some point, we've talked about that, he'll just go look at that. Have you been involved politically with, I know you, that term's kind of a loaded term. I was thinking on I know locally you've had to, talk to Chamber of Commerce people and the mayors and so forth about, you know, the building of your warehouse. But I was thinking more, have you been active at all in some of the controversy over the last 6 to 8 years about the program? Have you been called on to do that, write letters, or, of course, I guess you're a member of the associations?
Yes, I'm a member of all the associations. Of course, I'm a member of the Burley Warehouse Association, and I'm now chairman of the board of the Flukeyard Warehouse Association. Last year, I was president of the Flukeyard Warehouse Association.
So you've been called on probably to write letters and contact people and so forth?
Yes, and we have many, many meetings between seasons from February through July pertaining to the tobacco situation. And, of course, I'm always in a position to represent the tobacco warehousemen and the tobacco farmers, along with our associates are meeting the companies. I can't think of the word I'm trying to say.
Oh, your board also has to deal with the companies as far as coordination or so forth?
That's correct. Any item that it gets involved, any item that pertains to tobacco, we usually have the companies participate in the farm groups, Farm Bureau, Grange, and these groups, and the tobacco warehousing group participating in joint meetings, along with the politicians.
Of course, I've done some research up this way. How's the coordination down there? A lot of people, let me just paint this little picture and see how you respond to it. A lot of outsiders don't realize that within the tobacco business, there's not always a unanimous opinion, that sometimes the farmers may not like the warehouseman, or warehouseman might not like the buyers, and so on and so forth. How is that coordination? I know when challenged, they pull together pretty well, but things are not as unified as a lot of outsiders might think. That, you
know. Well, in the last 4 or 5 years, the companies and the tobacco buyers and the farmers has been they thought the most on the same wavelength any time during my tenure in the tobacco business.
Yeah.
And it's not near like it used to be. Your statements were correct 15, 20 years ago in the flue cure.
Okay.
But the flue cure disagreements are settled very easy, and there's committees and organizations in place to sit down and talk about the problems and come to an agreement on what kind of legislation the tobacco industry needs.
Mm-hmm. Two questions about farmers. There seems to be, from the literature, a lot more leasing that goes on in the flue-cured area. I don't know if it, people that don't own the quotas, is that just a stereotype or something I picked up, or is that true? And
well,
does that cause any special problems?
In the last few years, there's no leasing allowed in the flue cured. The pounded tobacco allotments are sold off the farms.
I see.
You can buy the allotment without buying the farms.
Okay.
And that's been a real step forward to get the tobacco allotments in the hands of the grower.
So obviously it makes the grower more enthusiastic about the whole program now that he's
right.
Raising his own tobacco.
And he invests his money into the tobacco poundage. So
okay.
We're losing a little bit of our real small family farm by that happening.
Right.
But there in return, we're getting probably a better quality tobacco grown, and the farmer is a little solider financially than he was back when we had the leasing,
right,
where he could lease for 1 year and give it up the next year.
That was the next line of questioning about farmers themselves. There's some criticism about the way farmers handle tobacco, and the old-timers will tell you that the quality of tobacco is not the same as it once was, and so forth. And of course, you're in the middle layer between trying to represent the farmer, getting the best price, and at the same time pleasing companies. I wanted you to respond to that, plus maybe make a comment about flue-cured and our burley tobacco growers up here, whether that's true.
Well, it's part of it is true, but we sit in kind of a unique position. The farmers will listen to the advice of his warehouseman a whole lot quicker than he'll listen to the advice of the buying company, or maybe even some of the agriculture departments with the states.
Right.
We find ourselves carrying a message to the farmer a lot of times for the companies, and the companies meet with us and really appreciate us getting the message to the farmers. We do feel that the farmers are definitely, every year we can see them get a little more business oriented and want to do what they can,
sure,
to clean up their product and to market their product in the manner that the buying companies want it marketed.
Of course, the companies have to cooperate by giving those prices.
They do, and sometimes we, as representing the farmers, we had a little disagreement because if a crop is not handled good and not stripped very poorly, at times it'll bring about as much as the other. But supply and demand brings that on. If a company's got tobacco to buy, they're going to get the best tobacco they can for the price that they're paying for it.
Yeah. Again, I know you have to kind of be political about the way you comment about our farmers and, of course, your customers, but with farmers in North Carolina owning the allotments, are there as many... It seems to me one of the trends here, we have a lot of part-time farmers, people work in town, so to speak, and then raise a crop on the side. Does that make them less careful about growing their tobacco, or is that true in both markets?
I think the burley farmer, where they're the part-time farmers you're speaking of, are not as knowledgeable of the changing trends. mm-hmm. as maybe the farmers are in our part of the country, because our farmers have gotten larger. And we don't have as many part-time farmers as we had before the allotments could be sold.
Okay. Gotta turn this over. This is side two of a tape with Mr. Lawrence Pope. We were talking about the farmers and the quality of the crop. What kind of you mentioned that you see more different grades in the flue-cured than you would here.
That's correct. Uh-huh. Yeah, the flue-cured has more different grades of tobacco in it than the burley does.
Are you suggesting to farmers, when they're receptive to it, to put their tobacco in more grades?
No, I think three grades is definitely a company recommendation and my recommendation for most of the burley crops. Uh-huh. Some years, such as this year, two grades was acceptable. Uh-huh. But any time that is stripped in one grade, it's going to cost them some money.
On the presentation of the back in a warehouse, did the transition from hand-tied to baled help you, hurt you? How did the warehousing react to that?
Well, I think it definitely helped the farmer, the warehouse, and then the buying company. Mm-hmm. When we went from the bundles to the bales, mm-hmm. it took a couple of years to get everybody used to putting
That's
it
true.
In the bales, how hard to press it, and mm-hmm. you know how important it was to keep the stem straight, and
right.
this type of thing. Mm-hmm. But I think it's definitely a much cheaper and much better system for the farmer, warehouse, and then buying company.
Everybody's pretty well agreed on that now, too. Even though in the beginning, I guess there was some complaining from, I guess, all quarters.
That's correct.
Yeah,
and two, by going to that, the companies had to make a large investment in new equipment, new machinery when we went to the bales.
Uh-huh.
And also the farmers had to make some investment in presses in different areas.
There's no trend for that in the flue cured. Why do I know we tried sheets up here for a while. Of course, they just about disappeared very quickly or never would really caught on.
I understand from several company tests made in the flue cured on baling it, the texture and nature of the flue cured tobacco, it has more oil in it, more sugars, and they say it won't keep in the bales.
Well.
It won't keep at all. It'll decay.
So they have to keep it with, I guess, the sheets allows, more air to get to the tobacco and so forth.
That's correct. Uh-huh. And of course, the sheets, we have a maximum 250 pounds per sheet.
Aren't they a lot harder for you to handle, though?
Not necessarily. We have equipment to handle those, which we can handle just as cheap as we can the burley bales. The tobacco don't show up quite as good on the floors. A little messier in the warehouses than it looks in a warehouse with bales.
Right.
But the company's equipment, they've got the equipment that can handle the bales unloading and processing just like they do the sheets. So it's From everybody's standpoint, I think the farmer, warehouse, and then company are much better off with sheets in the flue cured and bales in the burley.
I know that you've kind of followed the example of the tobacco companies in that, in a way, you've diversified your own interest. You've talked about how you have construction equipment and, you know, the building and so forth, and your family's involved in the business. How do you weigh tobacco in the total relation to the things you do? Are you retreating a little bit from tobacco? Do you still think that's going to be the core of your business, or what kind of personal planning do you do?
Well, we really do about like the company's done the last 10-15 years. Mm-hmm. We still lean on tobacco heavily, but we've diversified, but just in a small way from what the company's had.
Right.
And we feel like it's healthy. The tobacco is still profitable to us overall,
mm-hmm.
and yet our other businesses tie in with tobacco.
Yeah.
We use our labor and equipment that we use in tobacco. We use it in our construction business.
Mm-hmm.
And in some of these buildings that we build and lease to manufacturers, it still ties in with tobacco.
Have you done the same thing in North Carolina or tried to? I mean, is anybody utilizing the buildings there? I mean, do you have any that have two purposes, with the tobacco in part of the season and other purposes in other times?
We don't have many buildings there with the two purpose, but we do have some buildings that we sold tobacco in for a few years and then converted them to lease buildings and built others and sold tobacco in them.
I see. And you were trying to... The plan up here was maybe to try to repeat that.
That's correct.
You didn't take any other options or anything? Were there talks of two buildings at one time, or
We do have an option on 7 more acres of land adjoining this building. And so if we should lease this building to manufacturers or warehouse and distributors, we would probably build another building just like this one.
I see. Let me end the interview by addressing an issue. Of course, the health issue has been a big deal to people and so forth. In Kentucky, at one point, if you were a tobacco farmer, in the tobacco business, you were very seldom challenged. But now, even in the tobacco states, there seems to be challenges to individuals. Are you ever challenged as being a tobacco entrepreneur, and how do you respond to that?
Well, naturally, we always hear from it. It's always discussed. Mm-hmm. But our response to it is, if you spend the millions of dollars that's been spent on research from the health organizations in this country on any product, you're probably going to find a health hazard to any of the products. Uh-huh. So the tobacco industry has really stood up for a lot of controversy. Sure. And, of course, naturally, all of us know that tobacco doesn't do anything for you except give you pleasure.
Yeah,
you know, it's a pleasure product, mm-hmm. but whether it hurts you or not, it still is to be resolved.
Mm-hmm. From a personal viewpoint, though, there's not, of course, yeah, I've even encountered this in doing this project. When I say, well, I'm doing a research project on tobacco, I get kind of a funny look. You haven't found any personal with friends, or you don't find yourself having to defend your business in any way?
No, not any way whatsoever, as far mm-hmm. as defending it.
Okay. What about the future, as we've talked about whether this was a turnaround year with they're raising quotas in both markets, and I know when you build these buildings, you're looking at depreciation and how much money has to go into it, and how many years you're going to be involved. When you make these investments, you see enough return over a long period of time. In other words, what is your view about the how endangered this business is, or is it endangered?
We think it'll definitely be fewer farmers raising tobacco, mm-hmm. fewer warehousemen selling tobacco, and fewer companies manufacturing tobacco.
Mm-hmm.
But tobacco is still the cash crop for many farmers and all warehousemen and the tobacco companies that have diversified. They earn more cash out of their tobacco products than they do any of their food goods or beer distributor or whatever they have, beer manufacturers. I feel like over the long haul, we're building our buildings so they can be basically used for anything.
Mm-hmm.
Warehousing of foods, warehousing of grains, tobacco products, manufacturing of any type.
Mm-hmm.
And wherever the marketplace is, we'll try to convert our building to make it available for what's available at that, what's needed at that time.
I talked to one person that comes up here every year, and as a Kentuckian, you don't realize, but he said that this place is awful gloomy during the winter. I mean, everything's dead, and it's not very green, and so forth. Is it tough for you to have to come up here every year and live kind of in a strange place, in a strange town? Have you regretted ever investing here and not just staying there?
No, I've been here on 3 different tenures, and I wouldn't have come back with investment if I had problems with the weather or with the town whatsoever or with the Kentucky climate. I worked out here several years back in the 50s and 60s and didn't ever see the grass green. So I took off one summer and came up in the middle of the summer when the grass was green and the river was clean and flowing freely.
Yeah.
And you have a beautiful state.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much. That's a good place to end. Thanks again.
Mm-hmm.